This is Amy Hall, and you're listening to Stand to Reason's hashtag STRAsk podcast. And as a special treat today, in the studio, we have Alan Schliemann filling in for Greg, who is out of town. And so we're going to focus on some of Alan's specialties here.
Sounds good.
Are you ready for this, Alan?
I think so. I'll do my best.
Okay. Here's a question from David Johnston. He has a daughter with three kids, divorced, and can't have more. She has two frozen embryos, and she wants them implanted in her sister. On the plus side, snowflakes have a chance at life, and I'll get to meet them. The minus side feels bad. What are the ethical, moral objections, if any?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's it. No, sorry, there were a lot of abbreviations in here,
yes.
So I had to try and translate a little bit.
I was looking as you were reading that. I'm like, how are you getting that from what's been written? No. Wow, that's an incredible question because there's just so much involved. So I think we have to unpack a couple of things. Number one, just for our listeners to make sure they understand about snowflake, I think you call it snowflake adoption. That's right, yeah. So snowflake embryo adoption is something that I would say, generally speaking, I'm supportive of. And what this represents is children who have been conceived by couples who have performed IVF, in vitro fertilization. And typically that process will result in multiple children being created. So multiple embryos are created. So sometimes it's 5 or 10 or 15 or more in some instances. And after a couple goes through the process of having those embryos implanted in the woman's womb and having children, sometimes they have leftover embryos. Those leftover embryos then are put in freezers. And so now you have these human beings at about a week old, at the most, maybe three, four, five days old, frozen in these freezers around the country. And I think estimates put it around like a million now, if not more, of these human beings at a very early stage of development frozen. So, of course, people who are pro-life in their philosophy and their worldview are thinking, well, these are still human beings. We should care for them instead of letting them sit there and be frozen for all their lives or be used for scientific research, which ends up meaning they get killed. Why don't we adopt them out? And so this is where snowflake embryo adoption came out, where people say, okay, let's take these frozen embryos. Let's adopt them to couples who want to have children but can't for whatever reason or maybe just want to care for these kids. And what they do is they thaw them out and they implant them inside a woman. And oftentimes those kids actually have a fairly high rate of success. It's something like, I think, 70% or 75% of these children who are thawed out and implanted in wombs eventually are born and survive. And so we're giving them a chance at life. In fact, I have some very close friends who did that. They adopted two frozen embryos and they had these embryos thawed out and implanted in their womb. And then now those kids are born and they've grown up. They're friends with my children. They are like any other kids. They walk around, talk and everything. And everything's normal about them. I mean, except they feel a little bit cool to the touch, but because they were frozen for so long. But as long as you wear a jacket, you're fine. No, I'm kidding. So in general, I like the idea that this guy is bringing up, which is, well, what about snowflake embryo adoption? Wouldn't that be the best thing? And I think the answer would be, yeah, I think that would be, morally speaking, the better option is to have these children adopted out and give them a chance at life. So I like what he's written there. The other thing is that I'm just kind of hesitating to say, but I think I should just go ahead and say it, is that this really raises the question about whether IVF as a procedure is a procedure that I think that whether Christians should be participating in. And I know, largely speaking, Protestants typically tend to be in favor of IVF. And, you know, typically Catholics, for example, will be against it because they don't like the idea of separating sex with procreation and parenting and all that. And, you know, Amy, you know, we've talked about this before. We've both written about this as well, right? That as we've seen the IVF industry kind of grow and mature and we see what's becoming of a lot of the couples that go in to have this procedure done, we see pretty regularly human beings being created, like, you know, 10, 15, 20, sometimes 30 human embryos being created as a result of these IVF procedures. And now people are stuck with, and I just mean like they're now in a position where they are stuck in a moral dilemma because they have all these human beings that they've created that are their own offspring and children, and yet they're frozen. And now what do they do? And so I wrote an article, I think last year or this year, I can't remember when, but it's called The Black Box of IVF, where I talked to a specific couple where this happened to and just talk about the moral and ethical implications. And I think over the years, I've tend to now move towards the position of saying, I don't know if IVF is a really good thing for us as pro-life Christians to do because of all the incredible dilemmas that are created. And in this case, you know, you have this guy who's talking about his daughter who's faced with the situation, and now she's left with the situation. What should she do? She's got these frozen human embryos that are her children, and she wants to implant them in her sister. And then this becomes like, okay, so now we're talking about surrogacy. And so you just see how this whole IVF process starts this process of incredible moral complications and dilemmas. And it just makes me wonder, you know, should we really be doing this?
Yeah, I'm with you, Ellen. I do point people to a previous podcast that you and I did mm-hmm. on our regular podcast for an hour. And I can't remember when that was. It was, I think it might have been last year or earlier this year. And we talked about all of this because my position used to be, as long as you go in there and you say, I'm only going to create as many embryos as I'm willing to carry mm-hmm. and bring to term, and I'm only going to transfer as many embryos as I'm willing to carry
yeah.
at one time.
Right.
And my position was, okay, that's an ethical way to do it. But there are two problems with that. First of all, you don't know what's going to happen in your future.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you create five and you say, I know I'm going to implant five at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't know. You don't know if you're going to survive. You don't know what your situation is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if you're going to end up abandoning those children. But even worse, just being part of the whole industry, you are contributing to all of these other people who are creating 20, 30 embryos,
mm-hmm.
and you're contributing to the idea that children are commodities,
mm-hmm.
and it's changing the way people look at them, and people want to mess with their DNA and try and create mm-hmm. or choose one of them and then kill the others. It's a whole system, and anyone who out there who's gone through it and has tried to be ethical about it, then thank you for that. And I'm not trying to condemn people who have gone through this and maybe didn't see what the results could be or
mm-hmm.
didn't realize what was going on. But now I'm at the point where, yes, I would say, please don't get involved, because once you are, now you've got no good choices. Like this
right.
poor woman who it's unclear here if she wants her sister to raise the children, or she just wants her sister to carry them so that she can raise them.
Mm-hmm.
But so now you're in a whole,
yeah, I know.
You're in a whole situation where your sister is carrying her husband's and your baby. I mean, that
right.
is, you know, this, he says,
well,
this sounds creepy. And
well,
this
she's divorced, so she may not even be able to.
Oh, I didn't even, yeah. oh, I didn't remember that. You're
yeah.
right. So, it's a difficult situation. So now it's down to, do you leave the child frozen, or does your sister carry your child and either keep that child herself, or you as a divorced woman take on another child? Or what would you say to that if it's down to this? I'm sorry, this is a horrible moral dilemma, but...
I know. Yeah, so, well, I mean, before I answer that, I just want to say the first point you made is really important, because you say, well, you do this and you don't know what's going to happen in the future. Well, look at what's happened here. I mean, we can't – I don't know all the details of this person's situation. But now – well, when she had these embryos created, it sounds like she was married at the time, right? But now she's divorced, so that's changed. Like you
mm-hmm.
said, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. And also it says here – that she can't have more, which makes it sound like maybe something medically has happened with her. So again, now another thing has happened where she didn't anticipate perhaps before, when she's going to have all these human embryos created, what would be her capacity to be able to care for them. So, yeah, that's a problem. So I think your point, the first point that you made, is really significant. That is, we can't know the future about what's going to happen. And so we're creating these kids and then putting ourselves in a moral dilemma and jeopardizing their own lives. Now, with regards to what should she do about this, I don't know. I mean, it might be a false dichotomy to think that the only options that she has are to either leave them frozen, which of course isn't good, or implant them in her sister as a surrogate, you know, which of course then, as the person said, sounds creepy or feels creepy. I mean, another option would be to just adopt them out as a standard adoption situation, where there'd be a couple out there, you know, husband and wife, who are in a marriage and who want to raise a child. And that would perhaps be a better alternative to avoid the quote unquote creepiness of having your sister do it. And then again, I don't know what they're planning to do, so it's hard to say specifically what should be the right course of action.
One of the dilemmas that comes up, I think, for a lot of people are probably in the situation where their options are to leave their embryos frozen indefinitely or to adopt them out. Now, it's a horrible thought to think that your children are being raised out there and you have no idea what's happening to them. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a horrible thought. But in this situation, you need to think about your children more than yourself. If it's worse to leave them frozen indefinitely until, you know, either you stop paying to store them, or I don't know if eventually they die naturally. But I think it would probably always be better to find to adopt them out if you can, even as painful as that would be for anyone. I remember, I think that black box of IVF was the article you wrote about the woman who had 23 embryos, and she had talked to you about her situation.
Yeah.
And I would think that there probably are a lot of people out there in that situation. And I really encourage you to give your children a chance to live their lives.
Yeah. And I know we're way, way over time here on this question, because we're supposed to probably answer in just 4 minutes. But I think it's important to clarify, as you were suggesting, that you would have compassion on people who have already made this decision. And, I, you know, I'm not here to just say, like you were saying, oh, hey, if you've done IVF, you know, what are you thinking? You're a moral criminal, blah, blah, blah. Look, I get it. You know, my wife and I struggled with infertility for years before we were ever able to have children. And I know exactly what it was like, the emotions, the feelings, the psychological things that you do in your mind and think, man, I have to have children. And if I don't, there's something wrong with me and I'm going to do whatever it takes to have kids. I understand the motivation and the drive that people will go to in order to have kids. So I'm very sympathetic to how people feel about this. And so I know if you've done IVF, and I don't want you to hear I'm saying, or we're saying, like, you're a horrible person, because I know what it's like to be in that situation and want to do whatever you can to have children.
Yeah, the thing now is, if there are any dilemmas left that resulted from this decision, that you think about the life of your child first, even though that may mean pain for you. I just encourage you to give them life.
Yeah, yeah. And as this guy puts here, you know, he gives the pros and cons of the decisions. And he says one of the pros is he'll get to meet these kids. And one of the cons is that it feels creepy. And what you're pointing out is, you know, and I'm not criticizing this guy for saying that. I know exactly what he's saying, and I feel the same way. But it kind of doesn't really matter what you feel about this, right? What matters is, as you said, the opportunity that we give to these innocent, vulnerable human beings and giving them a chance to live.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a question from Kelly Y. Do you think ultrasounds before an abortion should be mandated? Why or why not?
So right now in our culture, of course, abortion is legal. And what we've seen a lot of pro-life people do is they try to implement different types of restrictions on that existing right to an abortion. So, requiring ultrasounds or 24-hour waiting periods or parental notification laws and so on and so forth. There's a whole bunch of different ways that these pro-lifers are trying to inhibit the right to an abortion. And so the question here about mandating ultrasounds would be just another way to do that, to make it harder to get an abortion or to add obstacles or things that might change a woman's mind. Now, just for the record, I would say, ideally, I would want abortion not to be legal. Okay, so I'm not saying, oh, we should do this instead of trying to outlaw abortion. No, I think we should outlaw abortion because it kills an innocent human being. However, having said that, if there was a law that was proposed in order to require ultrasounds, would I be supportive of that? My answer would be absolutely. And here's the reason why. We live in a culture that thinks and learns visually with pictures and images. And as a result of that, pictures and images have a very powerful effect on people's thinking. You know, over the years that I've been involved in my work with STR, I've done a lot of speaking on abortion, and I've attended many abortion protests, specifically ones that have been done at university campuses. So, you know, UCLA, USC, and other campuses around the country where there's been a protest, and they've put up images, graphic images of aborted fetuses, aborted human beings, these pictures that are about the size of a billboard, and they put them in the center of a secular university campus. And so, of course, what that does is it creates, you know, incredibly large crowds that come to these pictures and complain, like, what are you showing these graphic, bloody pictures of aborted fetuses for, you know? And, of course, the purpose of these people who are protesting abortion is to show them, hey, here's what's happening in abortion. And so oftentimes I'll go and just sort of mingle in the crowd and just see what people are thinking and saying. And by engaging them in conversation, I'll look at them. I'll look at the picture. And I'll say, hey, what do you think of this picture? And they'll be like, this is gross. It's horrible. And I'll say, why? And we'll start talking about it. Well, in the process of doing that for years now, what I've noticed is that some people, just by seeing the image of an aborted fetus, an aborted human being, will change their minds on the subject of abortion. They'll say, you know, kind of always been supportive of a woman's right to choose. But now that I see what it actually is, I don't think I could support that choice. And so I haven't even presented an argument in those cases. All they've done is they've seen an image of what abortion does to an innocent human being, and that alone has changed their mind. And so this is why many pregnancy resource centers will have fundraisers to purchase ultrasound machines, because they know that if a woman, even a woman who's abortion-minded, sees an image of her own child in an ultrasound, even though it's a scratchy ultrasound, it's not super clear, it's not like it's a picture, even when they sometimes see that, they will change their mind about their abortion. Abortion-minded women will sometimes change their mind and decide to keep their child just by seeing that image. So would I support an ultrasound? Sure. I think that'd be wonderful if we did that, because it'll just give these kids another shot at life rather than sort of just having the woman go forward with the abortion.
I think it's important to point out, you know, you hear people in the news, you hear people on the pro-choice side who are very against this because they think it's manipulation. But the point is, we're not trying to manipulate people. We're trying to correct a misunderstanding of what is inside the woman. We're not trying to hide things. We're trying to reveal what is actually there. We're trying to increase the amount of truth that the woman knows.
Right.
So that should never be a problem. Why should knowing more facts about your situation, facts, by the way, that if you found out later, wouldn't you be upset that nobody explained to you what your child looked like, or that your child was actually a human being?
Right.
So having more facts is not a manipulation. It's a revealing of the truth. And one thing, I just wrote a post about, it's called Biologists Overwhelmingly Agree That Human Life Begins at Fertilization. And this guy, as part of his dissertation, did a bunch of research, and he found that 93% of the respondents to his survey said that they believe a human's life is worthy of legal protection once it begins. And then 80% of the people said they trust biologists as to when a human life begins. So when you put that together, if they believed a human life had begun in the womb, they would believe that was worthy of protection.
Right.
So revealing that to people with an ultrasound and saying, look, this is a human being. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it might not look exactly like we look now, and so the age of the of the unborn child would make a difference as to, you know, whether or not they realized they were looking at a human being. So you'd have to explain,
right,
look, a human being begins when the egg and sperm meet.
Right. And humans look different at different stages of development.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right. So,
as is everything that's alive for the most part.
So, of course, I think the women seeing their ultrasounds is a huge deal. And by the way, his research found that 96% of biologists said if life begins at fertilization.
Oh, 96%? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense, though, right?
I mean, of course, because that's when it begins.
Because it's when it begins, right?
I'm just wondering about the other 4%. I don't understand.
Where do they go to school?
This is uncontroversial. This is what I keep telling people. It is uncontroversial when human life begins. The question is, when are we going to protect that human life?
Right.
And that comes to a whole question of what people are willing to admit and do that's going to curtail their freedoms that they want. So that's a whole different question.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Alan. We only made it through 2 questions, but I appreciate your answers. And thank you for filling in for Greg.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And thank you all for listening. Thank you for your questions. Please keep sending those on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Alan Schliemann for Stand to Reason.